Radio Prague News.
Czech fighter pilots have begun a mission guarding Icelandic airspace. The cabinet has proposed tighter rules for the financing of political parties. And a U.S. military convoy could travel through the Czech Republic in September. Czech Gripen jets on Wednesday began protecting Icelandic airspace, a mission which will run until August the 25th. Four of the Swedish-leased jets will patrol the skies over the country, while a fifth jet is being kept in reserve. Czech pilots are guarding airspace over Iceland for the second time. The Czech military also served in similar missions in the Baltic states as a member of NATO. On Wednesday, the Czechs took over the duties from the Royal Canadian Air Force, whose pilots will now reportedly take part in airstrikes against the terrorist group Islamic State. Stricter rules for the financing of political parties were agreed by the cabinet. On Wednesday, proposed measures include a 3 million crown ceiling on donations to a party from an individual or company. The Ministry of Interior, which drew up the proposal, had been pressing for a lower limit of 2 million crowns. The proposal also seeks to clamp down on the increasing use of political institutions under the guise of non-profit organizations. Further inspection of a Pendolino train badly damaged in a tragic head-on collision in Moravia suggests that only the undercarriage of the lead car may be salvaged and the rest of the car could be beyond repair. The head of Prague's Depot Kolejových Vozidel, or Prague's Track Vehicles Depot, Miroslav Kupec, confirmed the news. Damage to the vehicle in the tragic collision in Studenka, Moravia, has been estimated at 150 million crowns, but could have been considerably higher had the train's driver not braked as much as possible. In the accident, a Polish truck driver drove onto the track, allegedly ignoring warning signals. The crash killed three people. A U.S. military convoy numbering around 100 vehicles and several hundred military personnel will likely travel through the Czech Republic and neighboring Slovakia in September to take part in NATO ground forces military exercises in Hungary. The news was revealed by the Czech Defense Minister Martin Stropnický, who said the announcement was tentative and that full details of the transfer were still to be discussed. U.S. troops are expected to spend less than 48 hours in all on Czech soil after they depart a U.S. base in Vilsack, Germany. In March of this year, a similar convoy, but greater in strength, dubbed the Dragoon Ride, traveled through the Czech Republic following operations in the Baltic states. In other news, more than 30 Iraqi pilots have begun training on L-159 fighter jets in the Czech Republic, the deputy chief of the General Staff of the Armed Forces, František Malinický, has confirmed. Training on the jets could take over a year. The pilots are to be joined by ground crews who will be given maintenance training. Earlier this year, the Czech Republic agreed to a 750 million crown deal with Iraq on the purchase of 15 L-159s, which the Czechs no longer need. The price was later adjusted to 780 million due to fluctuation in currency exchange. I'm Jan Velinker. You'll find more news at radio.cz.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Daniela Zerová. Coming up in today's program, the government moves to tighten the rules on party financing, and researchers at the former Terezín concentration camp make out inscriptions made by Jewish prisoners on the walls of the fortress. Later on in Panorama, the opening of a lion safari here in Central Europe. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech coalition government has moved to tighten the rules for the financing of political parties. The proposed measures include a 3 million crown ceiling on donations from individual sponsors and a cap on the amount of money that parties can spend on election campaigns. The draft bill also envisages the setting up of an independent body which would supervise the financing of political parties. I asked political commentator Jiří Pehe how he views the proposed measures.
Well, I think that establishing ceilings is, in general, a good idea because obviously the non-existence of ceilings means that a lot of parties can be hijacked by very rich individuals or, as we call them, oligarchs, can establish their own political movements and spend as much as they want. But On the other hand, of course, the problem is also that political parties can find ways of spending money without really declaring that that they did so. There are all kinds of ways that especially Czech political parties have developed in which they spent money on their political campaigns indirectly through associated institutions or various advertising companies with whom they have behind the scenes deals for discounts and so on. So unless this is all somehow also controlled, unless this new institution that would supervise the spending of political parties will have some possibilities of controlling this indirect spending, then this proposal for ceilings will be to some extent toothless.
In the past, this was done by a parliamentary committee, which was regarded as being fairly toothless in this respect. Do you feel that this new institution will be an effective watchdog? Are there guarantees for that?
Well, we have to wait and see, because it will really depend on how this institution is protected from those institutions that it's supposed to supervise, that is, from political parties. It seems that it should be a fairly small committee of five people, but its independence will really depend on how it's selected and how it's protected from political parties. If it is really independent, then of course it may be to some extent effective, because it will be able to at least show how much political parties spend on their campaigns and also penalize them for behavior that that would contradict the rules of financing of political parties.
Political parties have in the past been loath to actually change the existing legislation and to tighten the laws for obvious reasons. This particular legislation was even criticised by a member of the coalition, by Finance Minister Andrei Babiš, who said it was Lex Babiš and that it was directed against his party and against himself. Do you feel that there will now be enough political will in Parliament to see this through?
Well, in the past, we have seen that the will to push various pieces of legislation on financing political parties was not sufficient. This time, there seems to be at least some consensus within the government and maybe also parts of the opposition. What may actually unite the political parties that would otherwise oppose this bill is exactly Mr. Babiš, because this bill is in some ways Lex Babiš, as he rightly points out, because political parties are afraid of his money and ability to outspend them. So in some ways, the fact that it is so clearly undermining his political influence, if it is approved, may actually unite other political parties that would otherwise not agree to support this bill.
Commentator Jiří Pehe there on a draft law that will be closely followed on its way through Parliament. Moving on now to other matters, a team doing research at the former Terezín concentration camp in North Bohemia have just presented remarkable findings in the form of previously undocumented inscriptions made by Jewish prisoners on the walls of the fortress. The Czech-German group behind the Ghetto Traces project had previously discovered valuable items in attics and cellars at Terezín. To find out more about their latest discoveries, Ian Willoughby spoke to team member Roland Fildberg.
The engravings probably were made with maybe with a stick, with a key, with maybe a pencil or something like that, because they were produced in sandstone, which is a very soft material. The sandstone is a material you can scratch with your fingers when you are, if you're just patient enough. So you don't need any special tools for doing this.
Typically, what did the prisoners engrave or inscribe in the sandstone?
They did leave their name and some information about the places where they came from, their origin, and their number. They had no numbers like prisoners in Auschwitz had, but they got transport numbers when they were enlisted and forced to leave their home places. Those transport numbers had a meaning for them during their stay in Terezin, which was sometimes for months, sometimes for years.
Why is this project being carried out now?
The engravings, for example, have been found on a former fortress gate. And this gate, for about 30 or 40 years, was closed and was part of a military training ground. So nobody, no civilian was able to go there and have an impression of those engravings. So it got forgotten, yeah, literally and absolutely forgotten.
What are you doing with your findings? How are you hoping to use these inscriptions and other things that you found in Terezin?
The project is about documenting, and my personal task is to do photography and to put all this in an order, and we put that on the website Ghettospuren, Ghetto Traces. And yeah, what's later on is we hope that all these traces are going to be preserved and maybe to be presented to the public. The first step is to do the documentation and to inspire maybe the public to discuss about all these things. And because, you know, must know that there is not just engravings and inscriptions, but also they built walls, they built cubicles inside these attics, which are still there. And they give an quite touching and very authentic impression of how the people had to live in those dark days. And they should be restored. But on the other hand, it's quite hard to present these things because it looks like rubbish, you know. And it is, in fact, rubbish. But in those days, they had nothing else than odd things to make their life a little bit more comfortable.
How do you find it personally being there, seeing these inscriptions, touching the walls that people engraved?
Usually we don't try to touch because we don't want to damage anything. And it's very, very delicate. My father's a history teacher, and I've been in touch with this history, with these occurrences all of my life. But if you just read about these things, and even if you watch a film, it's not as direct, as moving as when you are just getting face by face with these remains. Sometimes it turns into routine, and then you find such traces, and it makes you speechless.
Roland Filberg there, speaking to Radio Prague's Ian Willoughby. A reminder that you're with the International Service of Czech Radio, where it is now time for our main feature, Panorama. The Dvůr Králové Zoo, which is known for its valiant efforts to try to save the northern white rhino, has a new attraction. This month it opened a lion safari, the only one of its kind in Central and Eastern Europe. Just days after the opening, I spoke to the zoo's Jan Stejskal about the new undertaking and began by asking how the idea to establish a lion safari in Central Europe emerged.
Actually, in our zoo, there used to be a director in the 60s, 70s, and in a part of 80s. His name was Josef Wagner. He conducted 8 large expeditions to Africa, and he brought a lot of African mammals to Europe. And it was his dream already to build a safari in the area near the town Dvůr Králové, where now the zoo is placed.
And when was this? How long did it take to make this dream come true?
To be honest, I do not know exactly when he articulated his dream to have a lion safari, but I think it was in the 70s.
And how big is the safari, and what can visitors expect to see?
Regarding the lion safari, it's about 4 acres. And it's now a last part of our regular safari. I should say that in 1989, we opened safari for ungulates and birds. So we had a quite a long way through free-ranging herds of antelopes already. This way took about 4.5 kilometers. And now, when the visitors go and they see the safari, then in the end they can turn in the newly built part, which is a lion safari. There you have to go through the system of the two gates, and when you get inside, you have a circle that lasts about 700 meters, and during these 700 meters, you can meet a pack of lions.
And people can use their own cars?
Yes. To go through the lion safari, you can use your own car, but you have to have a closed windows, locked doors of the car, and you must not take any pets into your car. The other way how to go through the lion safari is in our special truck, which is built to be protected against, you know, possible attack of lions.
And in the event of an attack, there is someone there on hand to help, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. There are guards already at the gates who operate the gates. And then inside the lion enclosure, there is a car with a staff, and they have a special equipment to deter lions from cars.
I understand that there was a trial operation lasting for about a month. Were there any problems then?
Not really, but actually during this time we tried to merge two packs of lions together. And this is only thing that we hoped that we would have ready prior to opening the lion safari, because we have a pack of 3 castrated males and a pack of 4 females. And we thought it might be possible to get them together prior to opening the safari. In the end, it did not happen. And we have to work on this still, you know, during the summer. So now it's like that two packs swap inside the lion safari. So if you go inside, you meet either 4 females or 3 males.
How long can people spend inside the safari?
Well, it really depends on them. If you go with a truck, it usually takes 3 or 4 minutes in a lion safari, but the whole circle with all parts of safari takes about an hour. So, you know, it depends on how long you want to stay inside the lion enclosure. There is even a possibility to make a circle one more time. So I would say usually people would stay there 5, 6, 7, 10 minutes. But then usually if they see a lion for such a long time, they usually want to move on.
And how have the lions reacted to the increased commotion, to actually having cars passing through their enclosure? And
in the beginning, we decided to obtain lions that are used to cars. So we brought a pack of 3 brothers from Woburn in the Great Britain, and they lived already in safari. So we can say even that they were bigger professionals than we were in the beginning.
So you're not afraid of potential attacks?
No, we are not afraid of potential attacks. It's true that we have 2 young lions, Barbary lions, and when we took them into the lion safari with our staff, we saw that they want to play with the cars. So we decided that we will not allow regular visitors to go into the lion safari when there are the Barbary lions. So We open lion safari for a Barbary lions only in the evenings when there are no visitors. And we will train them to accept the cars in the same way as the cars are accepted by the grown brothers or sisters that we brought from Woburn or from Netherlands, from Arnhem.
I understand that you've also installed the wreckage of an aircraft on the premises.
Yeah, it's actually true. We call it Mandrill Airlines because we put there signs that evoke a face of a mandrill, which is a famous monkey from Africa. But to be honest, this is just for fun, for visitors to have something to see, something what could look like some place somewhere in Africa where some aircraft crashed.
Just to make it look more authentic. You opened the Lion Safari on July 12th. A lot of publicity preceded this. What was the response of the public like?
General response is really that the people are excited. and they are really looking forward. They are even eager to go to Lion Safari. When we see discussion on the Facebooks and so on, the people write, "Wow, we go there in a week. We can't wait." And, you know, these are typical reactions. There are a few reactions who say that it's not really nice to let cars among the animals. But I'm afraid that these people have never seen how it looks in Africa, where you go usually among the animals in a cars. From my point of view, this is a unique situation that we could call win-win. Because by creating a lion safari, we gave to our animals much larger enclosure than we could offer them in the past. And on the other hand, we also can offer now something to visitors that they cannot find in any reasonable distance from Dhurkhorlova Zoo.
Do they respect the safety regulations? You have no problem with that?
Most of them do respect, and when they sometimes try to usually to get the window down, the service immediately warns them they should not break the rules for being inside a lion safari.
And what are your plans for the future for this safari? Do you have plans to extend it maybe or introduce other animals?
Regarding the lion safari, we just want to, this is the first season, so we just want to see how it works, and we will learn from the operation whether there is something what we could improve. I would expect that when we merge when we get together two packs of male lions and a female lions, then we will have a pack of seven. Then maybe next year or the year after the next year, we might try to introduce to a lion safari even the males of Barbary lion together with the female of a Barbary lion. So in a few years, we hope it would be possible that visitors would see lions even with their cubs. I can't promise it at the moment, but it's something what we really would like to offer to our visitors in a few years.
Obviously, you're hoping that this will increase the number of visitors to the Dhurkhorlova Zoo. We've already said that it's the only lion safari in Central and Eastern Europe. Have you publicized this abroad? Are you hoping to get visitors from other countries as well?
Well, due to our position, we mainly target visitors from Poland. So we run campaigns in Poland in which we introduce lion safari to let's say, Polish people. And from their response, we see that they have become similarly excited as the visitors from the Czech Republic.
That was Jan Stejskal of Dhurkhorlova Zoo reporting on the newly opened lion safari there. Definitely a place worth visiting. And I'm afraid that edition of Panorama has brought us to the end of today's programme from Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.